All right, all right. Welcome, welcome. We are on to episode 13 and the fourth segment on our series on love, which again requires the most attention because it is very diverse. And we've already discussed the English language. There is a singular definition, a very generic or vague definition of love that is an intense feeling of deep affection or a deep romantic or sexual attachment to someone or something, or to like or enjoy it very much. I love that. I mean, again, these are very, we've got a very different feeling that we feel for our family. We've got a very different feeling that we feel for our friends and a very different feeling that we feel for our significant other. And then ultimately this definition of this love that God has for us. So to have one word for the, it really stifles our understanding and our ability to even communicate about what we're feeling with each other based on this singular definition. And so I went specifically into, over the last three, I went through the natural three loves, which are your storge, which is your familial love, that love of your family, and some of the specifics on that and what that means and the strengths of it and the pitfalls of it. And where it is in fact lacking, all of these three natural loves are in fact lacking this agape love, this perfect love, the very love. And we'll discuss that in this episode. And then after storge, there's philia, which is this brotherly love. That's where the term Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, philia comes from, and that's friendship. It's not just brotherly, it's sisterly, but in the original term, that's what they called it. But it's this friendship. It's this not companionship, because we do have a lot of companions, people we work with or that we share space with, and that's usually the start of philia. But philia is a love for someone, and it's often very easily seen between military brothers and sisters and that dynamic that they get between them. And then the third is this eros, and the word erotic comes from that. You can see that. And it's this romantic love, this intimate love between significant others or spouses that is very significant. It's a powerful love, but also, just as with storge and philia, there are shortcomings to it. And we, in inclusion of agape, this fourth love, the love, God's love, this perfect love, because God is love, and now we need to know what love is, what this love, this God's love that we're talking about is, and the easy reference point to go to. And it's undisputable. There is not a person in the world that would say that they were feeling unloved when they were feeling any of these behaviors of love, that agape is in fact. Agape is these behaviors, and it is the way that God treats and deals with us. And it's the way that this behavior of love that we should incorporate into these other natural loves to bring them to their fruition, to their perfection. And that in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and I brought this up in the last one, last episode as well, and I need to bring it up because this is the crux of agape love, and it is the missing component of the other three natural loves. As 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 8, you've heard this, you know it. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. It always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. And it always perseveres. And if you can nail that, if you can incorporate those into these other loves, or even just behave that way on a day-to-day basis, love never fails. Now, again, I want to break that down. Love is patient. If someone's been patient with you, you be patient. You're patient with your kids. Your kids are patient with you, and you're not always. Sometimes we're not acting out of love. Sometimes we make a mistake. As a matter of fact, more often than not. That's okay. That's me. That's you. That's everyone. Anybody who says otherwise is good. They're fooling themselves and they're fooling everybody. But you can affect your life. You can affect your own happiness. You can affect the love you get and the love that you give with this behavior, by the love that you give, by the way that you treat people, the love you give. And that leads us again. If somebody's patient with you, I don't think anybody's going to dispute that that's a loving behavior. Patience is something that everybody wants here. Be patient with me. Love is kind. Kindness, undoubtedly, is somethingly or undoubtedly is something that we are specifically, we know to feel love when someone's kind with us. Doesn't envy. I mean, it doesn't want what you have. It has no desires because those things we know lead to jealousy and bad behavior. It doesn't boast. It's not saying how great it is. Now, people will do this. You have to speak well of yourself. But being boastful is, oh, I'm so great because of this. No, I'm good at something. I'm good at this. I'm good at that. And you can say that if, in fact, it's honesty. But don't be boastful. It's not proud. Now, pride is something that is a very dangerous thing here. And C.S. Lewis cautions with pride in Mere Christianity that it is ultimately the catalyst to a lot of going down wrong roads. But that's it is a weighty subject, and I propose that I'll challenge that down the road. It does not dishonor others, and it is not self-seeking. It doesn't dishonor others. It doesn't want to give someone a bad name. It doesn't have the desire to bring someone down. It's not self-seeking. It's not selfish. It's selfless. It's in its nature, not about what it can get from you, but about what it can give to you. It's not easily angered, slow to anger. It doesn't say that it never gets angry, because there are times, you know, if someone keeps slapping you in the face over and over again, punching you in the stomach, I mean, or doing injustice, hurting somebody, or doing damage to your family or to your friends or in some noble way, you will get angry, and it's right to do so, but be slow to anger. It keeps no record of wrongs, of what somebody's done, especially if they've sought forgiveness or they've sought repentance or they feel that remorse. But that's typically what we seek as humans. But love in itself, the very love, keeps no record of wrongs. What somebody does to it in that case, where you're slapped in the face, it's dismissed it as easily as it's happened and has not perceived it as any wrong done against it. Or it may have, but it keeps no record of that. It does not delight in evil. It doesn't want to see people's bad behavior and encourage those things. It does not take pleasure in that, but it rejoices in the truth, the actual truth, not your truth, not my truth, but the recognition that if the truth, although unpleasant, requires it rejoices in that truth, in the fact that this person is being completely, genuinely honest with me. It always protects. And these are all things that we know. We feel this. That's right. It makes love. Nobody would dispute, well, that's not loving behavior. Of course it is. I think there's not a human being alive that would say it's not. It always protects. It means it looks out for your interests. It's protecting your confidence, protecting your trust. It trusts you, and it's believing what you're saying. It's protecting you. It always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. Hope is that great encourager to our faith, which leads into that it always perseveres. The testing of our faith produces perseverance, meaning that we will continue to go down the road, the good road, in spite of any obstacles that may be thrown in our way. And if we can nail all that, it also never fails. It never fails. And again, one of the great things that you're going to see, if you just want to see Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, he's speaking before Congress, I believe, or the Senate, and he's trying to get $20 million for funding for the public broadcasting service for his show and for the other shows on there. And we all know PBS, it was a home of Sesame Street, and, you know, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, The Electric Company, if you remember that. And there were some other shows, great, but he was going to get money. And this guy was a hard nose. And all he did was hit him with kindness and patience. And he wasn't boastful. He wasn't proud. He didn't dishonor. And he hit him with this stuff. And I think it was short time, 5 minutes, the guy's giving him the $20 million. It did not fail. It could not fail. But an example of these things where if you can use that, it has an incredible, incredible power to it. Now, that being said, we've gone through storge, we've gone through, which was family love, we've gone through friendship love, we've gone through romantic love, and now finally the missing piece for all these loves to have perfection is that love that we just discussed, which is God's love. God is love, and love is patient, love is kind, love is, and we went through that road. So we can understand that this missing component, this thing of love, is key to us. It is the only love in itself that is complete. The other three loves are natural loves. These are loves that human beings are capable of. And we can have fantastic loves. We can fill those in with fill in the gaps with other things. But the real missing component is agape love, God's love in those dynamics, in those relationships, and those will bring us to that perfect family love, to that perfect friendship love, to that perfect romantic love. But in itself, agape is the only love that stands on its own as a perfect love. And it makes the other loves what they claim to be, like what they should be. And people will say, oh, well, love doesn't conquer all. Well, yes, it does. But if you, what you're doing is you're talking about romantic love without this behavior of love, without incorporating this agape into it to fill in the missing holes that all of these loves have, then it's not perfect love. It's going to fail. They've all got pitfalls and they've all got damages, and they cannot stand specifically on their own without this behavior of love, this agape love, the very love. So with agape love, it makes these other loves what they claim to be on their face. What we talk about, oh, well, they're family, and our family, we should love each other this way. The way you believe a loving family should be incorporates agape. It's agape that makes it that family love that you talk about. Some people have it. They have the behavior of love. They've been taught. They've been raised up. Others have not. Others have no idea the behavior of love. They treat their brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers very poorly. And then when they find themselves in their own family as adults, that behavior carries on and they do damage to everything around them. And quite often, they don't even know. They could never even admit or realize that this they've never behaved in love, or they've only behaved in love when it was convenient for them. So it's a very difficult thing to manage. But C.S. Lewis states that we should grow closer to agape, not by avoiding the risks inherent in any of these loves, these risks that, you know, my family, you know, is going to hurt me, or I can't really depend on them, so, you know, I don't care about my family, or, you know, I don't have any friends, and I don't have friends because they're just going to stab you in the back, or they're just going to betray you, these risks, or I don't get into relationships because I know I'm just, it's just going to break my heart. My heart will be broken, and I won't be able to adjust that. And, you know, we shouldn't be avoiding the risks inherent in any love, but by accepting those risks and throwing away all armor, taking all risks and descending into all tribulations. And I want to go back to you because I had referenced the C.S. Lewis quote earlier in one of my episodes, and I was mistaken. The quote I had gotten from the internet, and if you believe that, it wasn't actually accurate, but I went back to the source and I checked it. And the actual quote is the same. To love is to be it. To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. And here's where the quote changes a little. Wrap it carefully around with hobbies and little luxuries and routine and avoidances of entanglements. And then lock it up in the casket or coffin of your own selfishness. Now, for in that casket, safe, still, and unventilated in the darkness, it will go bad. This is the verse. It will go bad. Not broken, but finally, unbreakable, impenetrable, resistant to all good and joy. There was a difference there, and I wanted to make sure that I clarified that because that's very important. Love isn't love until you give it away, until, you know, you have these feelings, but you need to do something with them. You need to behave. That's the behavior. The feeling in itself is self-serving. It does no good to the people that you actually love. You're the only one that benefits from feeling that way if you feel good about the relationships that you love. But when you use that love and you behave in this way, now you've ascended and you've gone to the point where you're utilizing this agape love and you're loving your neighbor, you're loving your brother and sister, you're loving your spouse, and you're loving these people. We live in a world where we'll say, when we get off the phone, I love you. But it really should be the other person telling us, you love me. And that would be make more sense to kind of correct this. It seems very self-serving or very almost proud to say to tell someone that I love you. Well, let me think about that. We're talking about this feeling, but this behavior, you don't show me it. I don't see it. I don't feel it. So it's often significant, this behavior of love. But when we put this specific love, this agape love first, only then can we love truly. Can we love verily? Can we love perfectly? To love someone truly, we have to love the true love more. Now understand, this is that relationship. God is love. You have to love this love more than you love the people. People would say that doesn't make sense. The love itself is God. It's God is love. This love, this behavior, this thing that we all know to be so powerful is God itself, is that true love. The other loves must be submitted to the very love, to the true love, putting agape above all the others and including it. It must be included. The value of it must be in leadership of these other relationships that you have. And now, if you don't understand where you can see kind of a concept of this love, I'm going to read a little poem here for your poetry time, a little Lovelace for you, a little Lovelace. Now, tell me not, sweet, I am unkind, that from the nunnery of thy chaste breast and quiet mind to war and arms I fly. True, a new mistress now I chase, the first foe in the field, and with a stronger faith embrace a sword, a horse, a shield. Yet this inconsistency is such as you too shall adore. I could not love thee, dear, so much. Loved I not, honor more. Now, let me explain that to you for those. It's old English, but what he's saying is essentially, you know, don't forgive me that I have to go pursue this other thing that I love more. He's referring to honor here in this specific issue, which is very noble. I mean, it's like saying to the wife when the soldier or the sailor or the marine or has to go out and defend their country, they have to leave the people they love for the sake of this more noble thing, this greater thing that in fact, if they had not loved it, they could lose everything. It puts everything else at risk. So you need to love that thing, that love, more than the people that you love. And you need that will give that, it'll allow you to give that and to defend it and to hold it tight through all relationships and circumstances going forward. And again, the natural loves are intended to submit to the agape love. These other feelings of your family is expected to behave this way, or it is a damage, it's a pitfall, and it prevents us from treating our family with love. It gets us into arguments. We have these expectations that somebody, because they are family, should be or should do a certain thing, in spite of whether or not they are treating us with love, that they should just love us, even though they're treating us like crap. You see that in husband relation, wife relationships, spouses, or whatever relationships, you see these, and it's a very disturbing perversion of what these loves are intended to be and what they are on their own without this agape love, this behavior of love. And see, the interesting thing, and I associated this a little bit with the philia, the friendship love, but agape is totally disassociated with need, totally and completely disassociated with any need from the other person to give this behavior. And that's what contributes to its perfection. That's what makes it this missing part, is that it needs nothing from the other person. It must be completely, and it is completely and entirely unconditional. This love is what God is. It is just the behavior. It is not a requirement. It does not need anything else. It stands on its own. And that's a component that within the natural loves, that's the most of the natural loves, the component in our natural loves are dependent or based on the need for the beloved, whether it's our family or our friends or our significant other, where it's based on those needs for something from them, and it's not a characteristic of the love itself, the very love, and it's a differentiator. The fact that these other loves need or expect or require something from these other, from other people when our involvement is what separates agape love and brings it to its completion. The desire to be loved is not a characteristic of the love itself, the very love, agape love, this love of God. It is the desire to be loved is not a requirement, whereas these other aspects are a delight, specifically the need that's needed in a family relationship where the parent, you know, feels needed, where the person feels needed. When that's lost, that relationship starts to struggle a little bit because it's such a powerful characteristic of it. And the desire to be loved in Eros by your spouse or your significant other is a significant characteristic of this love and a motivator for this love, this Eros love, this romantic love. And the delight in being in love is not a character, or the delight in company with this company, as in philia, in this friendship, the delighting, being delighted by their company, by enjoying your time together, is not a requirement or characteristic of the love itself, the very love, agape, this true love, this God's love. They're inherent in the natural laws. They're locked in. They're part of these natural laws, and they're not necessarily a failure to them, as much as they highlight the fact that we need the agape love. They highlight that we need these things to fulfill this. And these loves are also something that, whether they're needs or desires, we need love in our life. Without love, we know people. We see what happens to certain people without love in their life, or that it's resistant to love. And that's also something that's very unique to agape love, is the fact that we're often resistant to it as human beings because of its freeness, of the fact that it is a free gift, if we're doing it truly, because quite often people will be kind, patient, understanding, they'll treat each other with this agape love in expectation of something, and that's a perversion, and that is not agape love. At its core, that is a twisting, a perversion of the very thing. Agape love gives wholly and is entirely capable of self-sacrifice for the redemption of others. It is in itself selfless. It is not about what it can get. It is about what it can do for you. And that's a very unique thing. When you find yourself in that position where you're able to have that, then you're able to, you're encroaching, you're getting into that agape love when you're finding that selflessness, when you're able to give freely with no expectation and entirely capable of self-sacrifice. That's where you're tapping into agape love, because we know God gives freely and is capable of sacrifice for those that he loves. Now, agape love will never throw anyone under the bus. And this is a real issue that people have. And it's a self-serving issue. And like I said, when people do it, you have to have consideration and understanding. But they won't throw anyone under the bus. But they will throw themselves under the bus to save someone else. That is a characteristic of agape love. And if you have that, you know that you're touching on that true love, the very love, that agape love, when you'd be willing to throw yourself under the bus, when you'd take the blame for someone else, even though it was not your fault. You were the only one that maybe did not need to pay that price, or you did not need to go under the bus. It was the other person who did it, but you threw yourself under the bus to save them. And that's when, like I said, when we're honestly, and we identify that we're honestly able to throw ourselves under the bus, sacrifice ourselves for someone else, agape is entering our lives at that point. That's a very key indicator that we're touching on it. You can also check yourself in your behavior with that 1 Corinthians verse, which can determine whether or not you're in alignment with love, and that's whether or not you're in alignment with God. And unfortunately, another character, these other loves, they don't get it done. They will often imitate in their own way, in a positive way, quite often. They'll imitate agape love, and that's what makes them feel so good. That's how we can identify them as love. That's why in the same category, we would even put them in the same category as agape. It's because in their own ways, they do imitate the very love. For example, storge is very humble, and it's long-suffering, and it's very giving for the most part. Although for the most part, the giving is biologically inferred, in the same way that an animal mother biologically gets something. They get a sense of happiness from feeling the needs of their children. But it does. That's something similar to agape. It's very giving, and it's long-suffering. And in the same way, storge is that same way. Philia delights in the company or the enjoyment of another, of that friend. And in that way, agape does that as well. It's very much pleased by God, enjoys our company, and his kindness is to be received is a pleasure for him. And that love, when we show people love and it is received, it is a pleasure for us. And in that way, it imitates agape love. And Eros, again, we talked about that, jumping over this person's, your own selfishness, leap in one single bound. You're able, because of this love, to be selfless and to want their happiness before your own. That is a very significant aspect of agape love, which is why I spent a lot of time on romantic love. Again, I think I have some experience there. I understand the shortcomings and the pitfalls of what we call true love, but in fact, this agape love, the behavior of love, is what defines this true love. And then, this is a common thing. So we know that there's pitfalls and there's shortcomings, and there's this lack of perfection in these three other natural loves. And in those pitfalls, that's where those loves intend or are purposed to invite agape in, to invite the very love, to fill in those components, this behavior of love, and to fill in the missing pieces, whatever they may be, and ultimately become an agape love itself, a version of that with this behavior. But we'll often fill the gaps in with lesser things, and people will do it. There are people, I'm talking about this, like Christians are the only ones that can have a, or people that subscribe to these beliefs are the only ones that can have a happy marriage or a happy relationship or a happy family life. False. That's not true. There are people that do these things that have been taught them just as out of courtesy, common courtesy they call them, or learned behaviors. And there are other things that can fill in these gaps that people don't necessarily require or expect that perfect love. They can fill in the gaps with just common sense for the most part, of, you know, common courtesy, really, or, you know, sense of humor. Somebody's got a great sense of humor, so somebody may tolerate a little bit of crap behavior. Compromise. They'll compromise on their beliefs in these spousal relationships and abandon things that maybe should have been significant to them. And, you know, it's better than nothing. You end up with, you know, something. It's better than having it destroyed completely to fill in these gaps that are, these holes that are left by the lack of agape in these other relationships, or the lack of the behavior of love. But the thing is, CSOs, what is better is not, by association, best. It's not the very love. Just because we can find things to fill it in that make it work does not mean that it's the best way to make it work. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to continue a little bit more on agape and how we can work these things into, or work agape into, our three other natural loves. All right, now continuing on where we left off, there's this other aspect where, as I mentioned earlier, the human being is resistant to agape quite often. I mean, nowadays I think it is so perceived as very rare that someone's kind and patient and selfless with you. So we are opening up to it. But when we're able to receive this agape, the very love, true love, the behavior of love, when we're able to receive that, then we're able to give that love forth. And it is a very unique type of thing as well that's interesting about agape. We do have an innate desire for the natural loves. It's built in us. We do want to be loved by our family. We want to be loved by our significant other. We want to be loved by our friends. But quite often this altruistic and absolute love that requires nothing in return is very difficult to receive, because we often expect, and it's quite often correct, and that's why, but the human being expects that it cannot be this unconditional type of love. It cannot be that it does not require anything of me. And the reason that happens, and the older we get, it becomes more difficult to receive that, because in fact we've had enough experience with the flawed human being, the flawed nature, and the flawed loves that don't include agape, that we don't believe it. We naturally want to be desired. We want to be loved as an eros in that intimate love. We naturally want to be found delightful by our friends. We want that feeling. We naturally want to be needed, as in storge. These are these components. It's natural that we want these things, but we're resistant to this very love, this perfect love, this behavior of love by nature, because to receive a love that's supposedly completely unconditional, and it's only a gift, it only bears witness to the lovingness of the giver, it only testifies to that person's behavior, that's the only thing that it does, the only thing that it expects besides this behavior, we get this, but all they're getting in return is then the fact that it shows us, that shows us that they're loving us. That's all that it does. And it's very unusual. And the longer that we live in this life amongst our brother, other flawed human beings that are with us, it becomes difficult to believe that it exists. It becomes difficult. You hear about people who's hardening their hearts, where they've given up on love. It's a song, I've given up on love because love's given up on me. This happens because people get into these relationships, and we have this one definition where people don't say, oh, I've given up on storge, or I've given up on eros, or I've given up on philia, because they don't have agape in these loves. So they don't know, they've been imperfect, and they've fallen into these pitfalls and these snares that are associated with these imperfect loves that can't really stand on their own without this behavior of love being in there as well. Like charity would be something, true charity, where you give quietly, meaning you don't do it. The Bible says, you know, if you give, give in secret, because then you get your reward before men. If everybody praises you for what you've done and all your gifts and how you've been generous, then there you've gotten your gift, you've gotten your reward. But do it privately, give in secret, so that people, you're not doing it so that you avoid this imperfect area of doing it for some other purpose. But quite often charity contains so much self-applause and so much vanity that it's not agape. It's not. It's a selfish gesture, and it's something that is perverted, a distortion of this very thing, and it can't help but be resented by the human being when you see someone using their good behavior to their own gain, to their own advantage. And it distorts and it perverts this agape. And that's why over time, the human being will become resistant to receiving this, because of the fact that we don't believe that it can be so. We don't have any experience with this perfection of love, or love coming into perfection, because we've seen it tainted and distorted and perverted by these other selfish behaviors. When you incorporate anything that is unlove, when somebody is impatient and they try to pass it off with that impatience as love, there's a problem. When they're selfish, and they're selfishly motivated and they try to pass this off with one of their loves, it can taint it and it becomes perceived in a poor light. When someone, it's that thing when somebody in your family or your significant other tells you on the phone, and they always tell you they love you, but in fact they treat you terribly. They are unkind to you on a daily basis. It brings out the worst in us. It's not the very love. It's not the behavior of love. And therefore, we find it very difficult, especially with storge love, with family love, when someone is this expected love, they're expected to love you, and they're expected to be kind and patient and understanding, and they're not. It can do significant damage to what you know as love, and it can affect you and the way you love your kids. There are parents that just have their kids around that don't really just want to run up and give them a hug and a kiss. But don't really. They have their kids in the background, and they want to, when they go somewhere with their kids, they've got to go somewhere with someone to keep them company. They'll either go with another adult and they'll spend their whole time talking with that other adult while the kids do whatever they want. Not that this is bad. There's a time and a place for these things. But you have to make time to show that love, have that behavior of love, and enjoy that love with your family. You have to take time to enjoy that love with your friends. It cannot be perverted. People will take these things and want to twist them. They'll add selfishness into it very often. And selfishness is a big issue. And it will lead and pervert this agape love, this behavior of love, so that even when we try to incorporate it in there, it's perverse. It's not agape. When you are doing anything that's unloved, you are not in this perfect love, and you are not helping your relationships. You're only hindering them. It not only can become counterproductive to what you want from love, but it can in fact become destructive. It can do damage to the thing that you value, to the thing that you want to be this perfect thing. But in fact, by tainting it with unlove, you're not actually getting the job done. You're not filling in the gaps. But everybody here who has a parent or has had a brother or a sister that has treated them well, that has this agape love, there are people. If you've had a good parent, then you've been the recipient of agape love. If you feel fondly about that behavior, that they've been kind and patient and understanding with you, then you've been the recipient of agape love. And you can see the value of it, and you can learn that. But it doesn't even matter in spite of this resistance to it, if you can still give it, if you can still give that agape love, that perfect love to someone where you are kind and patient and understanding and slow to anger and selfless and not boasting and not envious and these sorts of things. If you can give that, the human being delights in it. They cannot help but be pleased by it. And so even in the sense, even in the face of resistance, we have to incorporate the behavior of love in our day-to-day lives, but most certainly in our love relationships, in our family love, in our friendship love, and in our romantic love. We need to incorporate this into it, and hopefully people are responsive to it. Now, this difficulty thing, and this is something that agape is also capable of, that we are, at least I am, I'll speak for myself, it's very difficult to love your enemy. To love your enemy, you can see now, to be kind and patient and selfless and slow to anger and not boastful and not envious and keeping no record of wrongs with your enemy is a very difficult thing. And that's why when we talked about commitments, the seriousness of not having an enemy in your own home, not having someone who's capable of doing you harm, or at least that is motivated to practice. Because if one person's practicing it and the other person is taking advantage of it, oh, it can do a significant damage. It can destroy things. Because if you're giving someone the behavior, the very love, the behavior of love, and in return, they don't know what to do. They don't do it back, or they're taking advantage of it. It can bring you to hurt and anger and fear and these feelings that are catalysts to you falling into unlove, which again, it happens. It's these things where someone does not want it. As a matter of fact, if they are not doing it, it makes them look bad, and they will push to make you look bad. They want to push you to behave outside of love if they don't want to come behave inside of love with you. So you can see that there's these perversions there that change things. Now, very unique. If we could tie this thing up with a nice little bow and kind of identify something about agape. Agape is free to love another disinterestedly. It has no interests in this love, in this behavior. It just is so. It is kind. It is patient. It is understanding. It is selfless. It is slow to anger. It doesn't boast. It doesn't envy. It keeps no record of wrongs. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always perseveres. It never fails. It's that disinterest in anything other than just being this perfect love that it is. That makes it so unique and brings it into this perfection. It's born neither of your need nor your deserving. It doesn't care about that one way or the other. It just is as it is. It's not that you deserve it. It's not that you need it. It's not that I deserve it or that I need it. It's just what it does. It's just the way it is. And again, it's this dynamic of this relationship where it gives all that it is. It gives that constantly and takes nothing in return. It requires, it expects, it's completely disinterested in whether or not there's going to be something back. It's not intended for that. It's a very specific thing, and agape in itself, if we have it, we'll find that we need people less but love people more. This is the challenge that I want. Need the people around you less. Need from them. Expect from them less. But love them more. Think about that. Need people less than you do. Take that out. That you need something from them. Or even that you want something from them. But love them. Love them more with this behavior of love. With this patience. With this kindness. Selflessness. Slow to anger. And I'll repeat that. That 1 Corinthians verse as we close out here. But ultimately, when we're in agape, we delight in being loved and not in being needed or needing anything. When we're feeling it, it's just about being loved that really changes the world. It changes the person, which is a very difficult thing to change a person, a man, a woman, to change them, or for them to change themselves. But if ever anything can do that, and we've seen it with prisoners, with criminals, we've seen it with, you know, people who have made mistakes, we've seen it with alcoholics or drug addicts, we've seen it with various areas where people's lives internally, who they are, and their lives have changed. Because of this agape love, because of this very love, because of this behavior of love, without any expectation, without any interest in something in return. It's completely inconsequential whether you receive anything back. But the human nature defies that. The human nature says that if I do this, then I should get this back, and I'm not wrong for wanting that back. Well, in fact, it's not about right or wrong, but it is about missing the point of this very love, of this perfect love, of this component that's added into these other natural loves that is very significant for us. Again, forgive the dogs. But the natural loves that we have, the loves of storge and philia and of Eros, these natural loves can become supernatural, eternal loves extending beyond the grave, insofar as we allow them to be taken into agape, to have agape fill in the gaps where these natural loves fail. And now on the series of love, I want to bring you back through this verse of 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 8. And this is the behavior of love. This is the component, very clearly and specifically, that need to be incorporated into your family lives, your family relationships, your familiar relationships, that love, that storge love. This is the components that need to be incorporated and added into your friendships. And all of these components need be added into this behavior with our friends, and these components of that romantic relationship, your significant others, your spouses, that will bring these relationships into their perfect intention. And if you can include your significant other or the other parties, if they'll lock arms and go on this journey with you and do this with you, then that's a recipe for an amazing life. So again, love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. Love never fails. Thanks again for listening along. This is going to be the end of our series on love, but I'm sure it will come up regularly, as it is such an important aspect of our journey to seeking righteousness. Thanks again, and I'll hopefully you'll hear me next time. Bye.